This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And today we're really talking about the challenges and uncertainties that propels a student to take a gap year. But also, how do we start reimagining what a gap year actually looks like in the South African context, right? And there are different theories and there are different suggestions that have been put on the table when it comes to being able to handle this notion of a gap year. And one such, of course, is around some form of military. If you remember, service training as a mandatory kind of program, the beginning of it or the initial conversations were introduced a couple of years back, where there were conversations around, hey, should we actually be thinking about putting our young people who've just finished matric into some kind of a two-year program of in-service training to either build character, build awareness, you know, build their inside skills development and the like, so that they become better used to the country. Now, most nations in the world actually have some form of military, and one such, of course, methods used to fill the different ranks with those armed forces vary from country to country. We've got voluntary enlistments where the citizens choose the military as their employer and serve the country as their job and career. There's mandatory service, which sometimes happens at a certain age. If you remember, South Africa even had some kind of mandatory service. We've got a conscription or drafting, which is a variation of mandatory service in which everyone in a certain demographic group must register for as eligible for military service. But the possibility exists that they will not be called to active duty. That's some kind of conscription. Selective compulsory service also is a part of it. And really, there are combinations and the like. And there are many countries that have actually introduced this kind of a mandate, including Algeria, Angola, Argentina, Armenia, Austria, Belarus, Belize, Benin, Bolivia, Brazil, Cambodia, Cape Verde, Chad. And when it comes to the South African context, and we're looking at where young people are right now, the plight of young people when it comes to youth unemployment, the plight of young people when it comes to upskilling and development, the plight of young people when it comes to a lot of them, right, a lot of them being NEETs. In fact, the latest statistics showing about over 3 million, 3.5 million or so of young people that are not educated, not employed, and not trained. Those are young people that are sitting on the side of the road where they can be actually put to better use. Given how many young people actually go in and start becoming nyaupe addicts and nyaupe users, is it not time for us to actually be thinking quite objectively and maybe even critically about what does a mandatory service look like for the South African context or some kind of after-school service program as mandatory? Well, let's get into this conversation. I would really like your thoughts on it. Mandatory service for young people who have just completed their matric, right, as a form of a gap year, whether it's a gap 12 months or whether it's a gap 24 months, do you think in South Africa it will work? Or how will it work in South Africa? How can it be pitched so that it actually works in South Africa? Do we need it as a country? Let's welcome our guests right now into this conversation. We're first joined by Papa Machikikawe, who is a spokesperson at the Tshwane University of Technology. Papama, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me, Faith, and such a pleasure.
We're also joined by Lumka Chiki, who is an educational specialist at the Chikulu Social Investments. Thank you so much, Lumka, for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Faith, and good afternoon to you and to your listeners.
Maybe, Lumka, let's start this off with you. You know, we're seeing right now the plight of young people, and I tell you one thing, unless we put something tangible in place, unless we start critically analysing and reimagining after school, what does after school look like for the greater discourse of the country? Nothing will change, you know? So there are those proposals of gap years and whether gap years work or they do not work. What's your take on it?
I think, Faith, the most important thing and the starting point for any learner listening today and anyone who, you know, has just completed matric and is considering whether a gap year may be for them, you know, any learner that is in grade 12 this year, the most important thing that we need to consider is that these learners are faced with huge life-changing decisions about what comes next. I think for us who've passed that stage, take for granted how, you know, scary that moment is when you need to try and figure out what's for you, what comes next. But the most important question that anyone needs to answer for themselves when they ask that question is why. because the why then determines for you what you do next, right? So I want to focus on two questions. There may be more, but the two I want to focus on in answering this immediate question is, if, for example, there's a learner who's just completed matric and their marks aren't good enough, right? But they know what it is that they want to do. Then I think that we need to explore what the options are to better your marks for you to be able to then follow, you know, whatever channel is for you, if, for example, university is for you. And you can do that in different ways. There's remarks, there's rewrites. The government right now is actually promoting a second chance matric program for students to be able to then write some of the subjects like maths, like science, which are gateway subjects for courses that they may want to do. The second part of it, which is equally important, and I think the focus of this discussion today, is if you're still trying to figure out what direction you want to go, then a gap year allows you the opportunity to I guess the important thing is you need to distinguish that a gap year is a stop or a break in formal learning, in a formal education, but it's not a break in learning. And so there is an opportunity to still continue learning during that year. And that's what a gap year allows you to do. It allows you to think through what it is that you may want to do. It allows you to explore options. It allows you, you know, to sort of figure out what it is that you want to do and to learn and get skills in different spaces and in different areas while you are on this discovery, you know, of what it is that you may want to do. So it really, and I mean, obviously, in all of those, there is the benefit of getting a stipend or getting some sort of monetary value, and you can then save that towards your education and your fees. I mean, in South Africa, we're in one of the most unequal societies, and the education inequality is higher than the education is higher than the inequality of the country as a whole. And so you will find that for some people, taking that gap year, allowing yourself the opportunity to earn some money, you know, while you figure out what you want to do, really does, you know, benefit them, and you actually end up entering university, entering whatever your next phase is, a better off person because you've taken that time, you've taken that break to figure out what it is that interests you, really.
Papama, your take in terms of these, the availability or even taking the chance of the gap year to figure it out?
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic that we're having today, Faith, and my understanding that in the long term, and I'll give it a different twist, in the long term, the South Africa youth unemployment rate is projected to trend around 68% in 2023 and 67% in 2024. This obviously is according to the econometric models that were published recently. And with that
this
in
is unemployment, youth unemployment, 68%.
Youth unemployment rate.
Yes.
And with that in mind, the understanding is that if a gap year has to happen, there should be a plan. It should be a gap year with a purpose. That's what I say all the time. And what is it that am I going to do in the next 12 months or 24 months? Will I be volunteering? Will I be working or doing a short course program? Will I be doing my driver's license? Maybe. And that does not take more than a month. The point is, it should be a gap year with a purpose. And to a black child, an African child, given the challenges that we're facing as a country on unplanned pregnancies amongst young people and drug addiction, drug abuse, the reason for a gap year should not be confusion in what to study or what to do with one's life post grade 12. Then we would have failed in the 12 years of preparation from the elementary phase to high school, you know, because our education system, for one, should have prepared a learner to move to higher education ease through career guidance and exposure to the industry they want to be in. You know, there's a famous quote, Faith, by Don Santo, which says, "An idle mind will, with enough time on their hands, is far worse than a politician." So it's important, really, to make certain, to make sure that when you take a gap year, it's definitely a gap year with a purpose, proper planning, you know. You can't advise a child from a rural village in Venda called Sheshe or Elena from Shawelo or Zola in Soweto to take a gap year without a proper plan on how the gap year will be spent, you know. because studying to others is your only way out of poverty. Mm. It's your only ticket to a better life. So if we're going to advise young people that this gap year, can we also advise prop on what to do next, especially when we're talking about an African child?
You know, I definitely hear you, Papa, and that's why I wanted to bring in this element around, you know, mandatory service training or conscriptions or some kind of voluntary or mandatory service. It's been, Lumka, it's been introduced. I mean, South Africa won't be the first, right? I was mentioning all but a few countries. And I know one of the countries, though we always are critical of it, but from a place of this kind of service, mandatory service training, Israel, for example, is one of the big ones, right? Yeah. But also there's Cuba, where they go in for about 24 months or so in Cuba, where you've got Denmark even does it, Egypt has it, El Salvador does it, Equatorial Guinea does it, Eritrea does it, Estonia does it. There's so many countries that actually have this mandatory service training for young people from the age of 18. Some it's 18 to 27, some it's 18 to 30, but you choose. So the mandatory will be either for 18 months, for 12. So for example, Algeria is 12 months for males age 19 to 30, right? In different countries, they kind of vary based on what they need. In South Africa, it was introduced as a conversation, but I tell you, it was shut down very quickly. And when we're looking at what Papama was speaking about on youth unemployment sitting at about 68%, and I'm sure even Papama, those are even statistics that don't even consider the expanded version of it as well, right? So we're sitting with this problem with youth unemployment. We're sitting with this problem of youth on drugs in this country. We're sitting with this problem with young people not having a way out. Is this not where we were supposed to start as a country, about saying, how do we get our young people upskilled with discipline, with skills, with some kind of insight of the working environment?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's value in discussing the model. But I think for me, the starting point is we can never, and I think Papam alluded to this in the introduction, is we can never discount the importance of education, right, as this vehicle that will drive pathways into the economy. And so my starting point will always, I think, just from what I would advocate for, would always be for quality education. Mm. Having realized that we are an unequal society with inequalities that are so high, you then consider what are the other models that we can adopt to be able to make sure that nobody is left behind, to be able to make sure that all these social ills that have been mentioned in this conversation, you know, are contained. And absolutely, if we have to consider, you know, this would be one model that could definitely work, because like you say, you're introducing learners who could be sitting on the street into a way of discipline, into a way of life, right? Beyond that, there is the stipends consideration, which is big in a society like ours, where, you know, every cent counts. There's also this exposure thing. You're exposing them to a world of work, to a world of interacting with people, something that they would not have had in a classroom setting, in a high school setting. Mm. And I think we can never discount the skills. Obviously, the skills, the technical knowledge, the soft skills, all of those things that you do learn through a process like this are also very valuable. So I do think that there are many other benefits that we can think about. Obviously, if I come and I'm applying for a job and I say, this is the experience that I have, you know, I may be favored over someone who has got no experience, having just taken a gap year, sort of figuring themselves out. And so I do think that these benefits are really good, but they don't necessarily far outweigh the benefit of focusing on making sure that every child gets this quality education. But secondary to that, it is important that we do get children off the streets, that we do contain all of these social ills. And this is a model that we can definitely, I mean, replicate in a South African context. Although I do think in a South African context, there are some considerations that we'd need to have. But I do think that it's something that is worth, you know, investigating a little bit more in terms of how we consider learners in a gap year context, but getting those skills, getting those stipends and learning this discipline and, you know, in a work setting.
Yeah. And Papa, I mean, it's a gap year with purpose. And the problem is also with the inequalities that exist within the South African context, the inequalities also show up when you have to apply for jobs. A lot of our young people, and we've had this conversation even here on Power Lunch with employers, where employers will tell you they've got the pieces of paper to say they've graduated. Yes, we take it, they have got them. But these young people are unemployable. Because never mind the paper, they don't have the emotional intelligence, they don't have the creative intelligence, they don't have the, they may have the IQ, but the EQ, the CQ is completely missing, as well as the actualization to be able to handle a place of work.
No, true. You know, I'm going to give a personal twist to this. I took a gap year, which soon escalated to another gap year. And that was not by choice. It was because of financial circumstances and that did not allow me to further my studies at the time. And also, you know, referring to young people, other challenges, like I said earlier on, might be less exposure to career guidance at schools, and because that's where it starts, you know, from the elementary phase. You look at the Chinese system of education, you know, and that's where we need to instill the discipline, not after matric. That is my argument, you know, the discipline, the commitment, you know, the skills, not after matric. We need to instill a culture, you know, that will assist them post matric to make the right choices, you know, let it be career wise, whether they choose to take a gap year, you know. There are significant implications to taking a so-called gap year instead of directly entering into studies. And chief among these is the fact that graduates who went to study straight after school and who completed their qualification within the required time frame are significantly better off than matriculants who elected to enter the workplace right away or who opted for a gap year, particularly in the gap year, if the gap year is unproductive, you know. And also, a gap year doesn't necessarily mean that you take off a year to travel the world and pretty much do nothing, as the term was understood in the past. The concept has evolved to include other activities, such as getting a job after matric to earn some money or gain work experience or volunteering or even, you know, undergoing a structured program. I'm going to go back to my point. We need to train them while they're young, so that after matric, there is no confusion. There's clear understanding on what they need to study or on what they need to do next. That's where I stop, Faith. Thank you.
We're going to take a couple of your calls after the news as well on 0861987000. Maybe you are also that person that took a gap year and you're figuring out, and it actually worked out for you. How did you fare in it? I'd love to hear your perspective. And then, of course, is that issue of what do you do in this gap year? Now, as I said, the big conversation once upon a time was around mandatory service training for all young people from the ages of 18 to about 2 years. That conversation has since died out. But given the statistics when it comes to youth unemployment in this country, I mean, we're here now 68% or so, right? Given how many young people are actually not in the systems, should we not be reintroducing the culture at least, or reintroducing what would service training actually look like for a young person? If they had to be deployed and learn and be upskilled from the age of 18 in a 2-year mandatory program or even a 1-year mandatory program, would it be for the betterment or for the worse off situation, or the detriment rather of young people? Was it for the betterment or the detriment of them? And maybe you also took that gap year. Let's talk after the news. Right now, that's 1:30. Let's get your latest Empower news.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
25 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Thank you so much for staying with us in conversation on Power Lunch on Power 98.7. Now we are talking. We are continuing the conversation, looking at the benefits or even just the criticism behind gap years. And also, what do we do whilst we're in this year of gap, especially when it comes to the South African context? Should we be encouraging a thought process around getting young people prepared for the aftermath of matric? And have we adequately prepared them for what is to come next? And is this the time to start introducing conversations around mandatory service training, as we've seen with other countries, whether it's being assigned to the military and the like, as we've seen with other countries have implemented it across the globe, and they've managed to implement it in many instances quite successfully. We're still with our guest Lumka as well as Papama, and of course you on 0861987000. Let me start off in Silver Lakes. Hello, Jan.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
And your two guests. Your two guests are cheating each other with two heads in different ways. The first one that I'll side with is that the one who says, let's build a culture like Chinese. When kids are taught career guidance when they are still young, at the level of matric, it won't be a problem because of this thing is not done within South African black schools properly.
Mm.
And then the question that should be asked is, what are we trying to achieve by having mandatory in-service training after matric? Because I know definitely sure that previously during apartheid times, all Burkis used to go
For about 2 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Have we found out exactly what were they doing there? Because if I can tell you, if we do all this exercise, but at the end of the day, will all these kids, when they go to tertiary level or after going for military in-service training, compulsory one, will they have an environment waiting for them to work? Because we've got hundreds of thousands of graduates at home today. What are we doing with them?
Mm.
Are we talking about them or are we talking about only these ones?
Yeah, and the big question then becomes, what about, what is the value behind all of this? But Jan, I tell you one thing. I think we have to think of something different. Otherwise, the big concern, I guess, more than anything else, Lumka, is those 3.5 million young people or so that are sitting in the corner, that are doing nothing. They're not educated, not employed, not trained. We don't speak a lot about them, but they're in existence. They are here. And they're not going away anytime soon unless they get themselves into formal education, unless they get themselves into formal employment and the like. And what are the potential dangers of even having young people with these idle minds sitting without any form of economic or even skills development opportunities?
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, you're absolutely right. And if we look even just at the crime statistics in our country, you know, how much of that can be attributed to the fact that not only are we in unequal, but, you know, people are sitting with nothing to do. And I think that the government has tried to be quite proactive in some of the policies around addressing youth unemployment. I mean, we look at that, the YES program, that I think it's called Youth Employment Service, where labor, government, businesses are all trying to get together to create jobs, to bring these young people into the workplace, you know, get them with some skills, get them a stipend, get them earning some money, get them learning about where they would ideally like to be in the future. And so I think those are really proactive, but, you know, it's for a limited number. And businesses can also only attract that many of these candidates to be able to house them, you know. So I think that there's an imbalance in terms of how much our labor market can absorb of you know, the people that are looking and are of working age. And so you will find, you know, with this 3.5 million number that we're speaking about, there are people who are willing and they're able to work, but unable to because the labor market simply just cannot absorb those people. And so I think that's a different conversation to have. But when we do think about what kind of opportunities exist over and above the YES program, you know, having a structure where young people are able to contribute to the economy by participating and by learning those skills is critical. And I think that when we think about the formal education sector, we must also realize that not everybody has A, the interest, but B, the ability to be able to go to university. Not only from a funding point of view, but also just from a skills and an ability point of view. So how do we then attract young people to be able to go to TVET, you know, TVET colleges, to learn those skills, that artisan training, to be able to use their hands? And so I do think that there are different avenues to success. And success for young people does not necessarily need to be formal education. But in the meantime, when we do have young people who are sitting, who are unemployed, we will see, you know, health is affected, crime is affected, and there are many other aspects that will, you know, suffer as a result of young people not having anything to do with their time.
It becomes such a difficult conversation to have because it shows us how many gaps we still have to fulfill before we get this issue around education right. Jeff, in Midrand, you say that the whole issue of mandatory service is actually a good one. Hi.
Yes, absolutely, Faith, and your guest there. Let's take it from, you know, everything which was related to apartheid, we have also just destroyed that. Mm. Every single white male before, you know, they were all, when they finished matric, were supposed to serve at least one full year at the army, okay? Mm. And you must see the amount of discipline that they came out of that 1 year. They'll be getting stipends, but they'll be work ready after that, okay? We're sitting with hospitals currently that are filthy dirty, okay? Imagine what difference it will make if we can employ, okay, at a very acceptable stipends for those youth that are sitting at home, and we deploy them in the hospitals to clean, take care of. We have people that are old mamas and old ladies that we call assistant nurses. Okay, what if we actually take this youth, we put them into the hospitals, we train them, and when we then take a pool of nurses to be trained, we take from this youth that we would have been grooming, they are aware of what is happening in the hospitals. We take black male, we send them to the army, okay? And they're in the army. They can learn all different sorts of trades. The army was used by white people to get to teach their children different trades within the army. And when they come out of the army, okay, they are work ready. Okay, they have been prepared from school to work readiness. South Africa at the moment is paying huge amount of money for education. For what? After that, we get these kids to actually sit and don't give back to society. Yeah. After they have been paid for in what we call a free education society.
Jeff, and then after that, 3 years. I struggle with the notion that even after getting this education, the high education, right, a lot of the young people, and you will hear it, as I said, we've even had this conversation here on lunch, that the employers themselves will say, no, they've got the paper. We hear you, but they're unemployable. Right, they don't have the discipline. They don't have the learnings. They don't have the chutzpah, for lack of a better term, to be able to thrive in these work environments. So they become difficult to even absorb, and that's why we've got so many career interns. Right, I call them career interns because they stay for 2 years here, they stay for 2 years here, because nobody wants to absorb them. But what would happen if we actually created training that upskills them from a mind, body, spiritual perspective, discipline perspective, even altruism and training perspective, and actually say, go to school after that, get your formal education, and then you become employable, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I must be honest with you, I do agree with you, and I think that we must bring back some of the things that we have just, you know, pushed out just because they were under the name of apartheid, and we cannot do them at the same time because we still begrudge anything and everything that has happened with apartheid. There were certain good things that we could have learned from. Our government can take them forward, and we can groom and build our children on that basis.
Kamogelo and Centurion, you also took a gap year. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks to you, Mama. Go ahead.
I'm good, thank you. I took a gap year in 2021. I matriculated in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I did pretty well, if I do this in myself. And that year, I wasn't accepted into any kind of varsity. So my next plan was, I wrote down short-term goals that I wanted to achieve that year. For example, modeling. And I did exactly that. So I'm a very go-getter, if I can say that. I strive for whatever I want. I did that. And then at some point, I remembered, okay, I need to go and upgrade. But the deadline was already over, so I couldn't. And I prayed about it, and I just said, you know what, God, I want to go to this varsity. The next year, or later that year, I got an email from UCP saying that I must come and study there.
Mm.
So with me, I was just really, I don't know, the gap year really helped me a lot to just also navigate my mind into what exactly do I want to do. So, yeah.
It really is fantastic that things turned out for you, and how are you handling it?
Sorry?
How are you finding it? Have you started at UCT, Kamogelo?
Yes, I have. I started last year. Last year was my first year.
Okay, yeah. And you're loving it?
Yes, I am. I definitely am.
That's very great to hear. And thank you so much for adding your insight on this one.
Thank you.
Let me go to Northcliffe. Lotta, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks, and you, sir. Go ahead.
Good, thanks. My comment is that I understand that the topic is about gap year, but there's something bigger that we need to do at a policy level in terms of the legislation. So if you go to the township and all of them, it could be Sosha, Mamelodi, Gippsloot, you go there around 10, you find there's so many kids that should be at school that are just loitering around. And that in itself has got a cost in terms of economic value of the country, because some of these kids that are there, those are entrepreneurs and whatever else, that it's people that should be at school so that they can contribute to the GDP of this country. So I wouldn't mind if my kids take a gap year. I think that at home we've got enough activities for them to participate in that. But what we also need as well, besides, I think there has to be more of your TVET type technical training institutions that somebody could just go to. They must just be taught like some of the technical skills. It could be computer, it could be whatever else, so that they more become of hands-on people. Because there are people, like you call them, career interns. I've seen them as well. You get somebody that needs to be writing a motivation, but they take the whole day writing that particular motivation. The reason is that they just can't think. They just can't put things together. And that in itself is a cost. If you're running a private business and you have somebody that needs to sit and do a report and they take that long, when everything else is costed at an hourly rate, it's a cost to your business. That is why you would not be able to get such people. There's no comprehension, there's no literacy, just basic things. And people don't read. I mean, if you look at most of the government policies, for instance, that are there, there's forever a legal opinion on those things. Why have they not sat down and review each and every policy, so that you do not depend on companies or institutions or NGOs taking government acts to the court and the court declaring those unconstitutional? So it's actually a much wider problem just than the gap year. And it also contributes to the brain drain that we are having, because all those highly skilled people, they're joining multinational firms and they are leaving the country. This country is not going to evolve, because you're going to lose the high quality caliber candidates and your cream. Once you do that, you will depend on your foreigners, and everything else will be specialized in your country, will be run by foreigners. That is a huge risk for the country.
I definitely hear you on that one, Lotta. And the truth of the matter is, Lumka, we can speak about idealism in terms of what does the ideal South Africa look like, or we can speak about reality and really go into what is the reality of a South African or a young South African. You know, what are some of those challenges that they experience after school? And I tell you, just dealing with young people on a day-to-day basis is my business. It's young people are career interns. Right, they don't get absorbed. They don't get given those fixed term contracts or permanent contracts, because you will often hear and say, the person will say to you, no, they are unemployable. It's so much work to teach them because they lack in certain other areas. They lack in comprehending the practicality of their learning tools. Right. And that's where it starts with how then do we start preparing these young people adequately enough that not only do they have the quality paper, but they've got the quality implementation strategy. And could the gap year not be used for that specific reason?
Yeah. No, and I think you're right, Faith. I think the way that our education system is structured is very much a top-down approach. And what that means is that you've got one teacher in front of, you know, a classroom kind of as the primary source of information. And with the class sizes that we have in South Africa, you cannot even fathom that learners will be able to get anything outside of even just the content of the curriculum, you know, the annual teaching plan. So teachers can't actually veer or venture into other aspects that are important. And so this conversation around how do we start to introduce career guidance? How do we make sure that, you know, learners actually know what are the opportunities out there? But I also think when we start to think about gap years, we need to also be creative, because we are actually in a changing world. digital skills have become even more important. There's a language, a digital literacy that learners need to, you know, the youth now need to have. And it's more important now than it ever was, you know, when I was in matric, for example. And so I think that there's an opportunity there where we can be able to use the overabundance of skills that are available in the youth that are sitting to be able to kind of tap into that, tap into how we can be innovative, tap into how we can use today's context. And I know that some of the callers have kind of said this was done in apartheid, but, you know, the context today is different. The generation now is very different. And so there is a mismatch sometimes between what learners need coming into a workplace, but I also think there's a mismatch in terms of the skills that they have, and we need to meet each other halfway. You know, companies need to be able to take these unemployed youth, understand their context. If there's an African child from Soshanguve, they may have nuances that they have not quite learned. And then, although it may not be the role of business to be able to teach those, I do think that there's an opportunity for us to think creatively about how we can upskill all of the youth to be able to make, you know, the most of every skill that they have. The last thing I want to say on this, as I'm just speaking about skills and upskilling and the role of, you know, corporates, companies, the government, business, civil service, is that when we are taking on youth, I think the most important thing is also to be able to give information. And so, for example, coding and robotics has become a really big thing in South Africa, right? All of a sudden, the government wants to be proactive in its policy, wants to get learners learning coding, robotics. This cohort of matric students and the 2 years before in COVID are probably the best placed to be able to take advantage of that opportunity, primarily because their teaching and learning was blended. And so, when we were in hard lockdown, for those who are privileged, you had the opportunity to make use of computers, right? And I think if you are sitting at home, there's an opportunity to upskill yourself. Get those Microsoft certificates. They're free. And what you can actually do is start to code and, you know, write code for different companies and get money in that way. And so it doesn't necessarily always have to be something that's drafted and driven by policy, because sometimes policy needs to be evidence-based. But I think youth can also start to think quite creatively about how they make use of whatever resources they have at their disposal to try and change their reality.
I'm going to go back to the phone lines and go to Johannesburg. Hi, Simon.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks, and you, sir. Go ahead.
I'm okay. I'm a first caller.
Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Very interesting topic. I want to make an input here. Let us not blame the government to say that government, they must do this and this. Most of the people, including myself, we've been working for years, and we have moved from one role to another. For example, what is happening with the skill that you gained before you move to another role? So that skill, for example, if you were, the past 5 years, you were the interior designer, you can do what you call the skill transfer. You can get people who are interested in interior designing. You get a laptop, you load the program, you know all those softwares, you give to a person, you just show a person how to use that thing for only an hour. And that person will start practicing, and you will guide that person. So we cannot just rely on the government. This is what I'm doing. I was doing the lighting designs before, and then I was moved from that role. What I did, I just said to myself, I don't want, you know, this just to vanish. I bought a computer, a laptop. I gave it to my nephew. He's doing matric. Actually, he was doing matric last year. So he's writing the supplementary this year. In the meantime, I loaded the trial of the AutoCAD software, and I gave him the videos. You can even go to the internet. I bought him the data, 150 rand. I told him, you are going to teach yourself how to use the AutoCAD. I can tell you now, he's at an advanced level. He knows things that I don't even know. if you specialize in tiling, just get some of the members of the families who are not working, teach them how to lay the tiles. They're not going to come and take your job. It's a skill transfer. I used to work with a colleague from Germany. He said, after the matric, I don't know what they call it in Germany, if you are interested in electrical engineering or any engineering, before you go to university, you have to go to the company to do what you call, I will call it internship, so that you can see whatever the electrical that you want to study.
Simon,
is something that
I,
you will like.
I hear you 110%, but you're talking here about a community that will make a conscious decision to be self-starters and also be self-collaborative, right? And the truth of the matter is, in the South African context, that is not always the truth. That's not always what we are living with. Because had it been so, we wouldn't be sitting with an unemployment rate that is so high. And you're right. There is going to come. We need to be able to also take collective responsibility for how we've perpetuated even the youth unemployment that we're sitting with. But unfortunately for us, that we don't have communities of self-starters. We don't, right? A lot of the communities are relying on external forces to help them self-start. And that's why we're asking, posing the question, should then, when we're taking and thinking about these gap years and the like, is it not time for us to go back and revisit the conversation of in-service, mandatory service training? Mandatory so that we can actually upskill these young people. We can make them employable. We can do the skills transfer summit that you're referring to, but we can do so within a year or 2 years without having to say, this reminds us of apartheid. The apartheid one was for the purpose of being able to indoctrinate these children with all of those skills. But here we're able to use similar methodology that is being attuned to other countries and say, what does it look like to take a gap year and actually upskill our youth? In a country where there are self-starters, 100% it works. I worry about the South African context where we're seeing the complete inverse. Hulisani in the Northwest, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I just wanted to share my experiences. So to say that their programs were only run during apartheid may not necessarily be true. I am a beneficiary of the South African Navy. I joined the South African Navy in 2003 in skills development program. It may not have necessarily been a mandatory program, but I think there are about 1,200 of us who joined at the very time. The level of discipline that was instilled, the level of culture and understanding how work context work, the respect that they give you of people and the work environment itself, and the different skill sets that were there, when we were part of that program for 2 years, is what actually led me to be where I am today. When I look back today, I'm talking to you as an HOD of social performance in a mining company.
So it worked, Kirisani.
Absolutely. You know, it works. So this is a program that can actually be implemented, not only in the, you can implement it in the Department of Health. You can implement it at the teaching level at schools. You can implement the very same program. It allows young people not to only learn basic working skills, but also the culture mindset of a working context is far much important than the skill you have, because the skill you acquire when your attitude is ready for that particular skill. And the challenge that we're actually facing right now, it's not a skills challenge. It's the attitude, it's the mindset of young people, and the programs that are currently here are not necessarily addressing that. If we focus on the skills alone, we will miss the boat.
So the military in-service training could work?
It worked for me. I think 90% of us are already out of the military. And we talk, we're doing far much better than we would have been. I'm talking as a beneficiary of that particular program. 20 years since I've joined the Navy, I've left probably 17 years ago. I attribute wherever I am and how I engage with people to that program. I give respect to that program.
Well, listen, I'm going to pause it there. I'm going to go to the news. We're going to come back and wrap up. Should it not be about time that we start revisiting what does a mandatory service program look like in South Africa? It's 201. Let's get your latest now in Power News.
12 to 3 p.m.
Power Lunch with Faith Mangope.
We're going to wrap up very soon. I'm going to take a couple of more of your calls regarding what does a gap year look like in the South African context? What would an ideal gap year look like? And when are we going to start having the conversation around mandatory service training, military training for our young people, especially for those minds that are sitting idle. Shocks to Sibani saying, Faith, hi, a government won't implement that breakthrough idea. If they do, to whom will they sell Nyaupe? Oh my gosh. Mac saying, imagine if there was a blockchain-run conscription system where even experienced professionals are drafted into playing a role in boards of in SOEs, SGBs, councils, and the likes. Imagine a Bonang Mohale being an SGB chair of a school in Gautama. Stretch that mind. I'm going to take Dan in Pretoria. Hello, Dan.
Good day, Faith. Yes, thank you, sir, for having me on the show.
Much appreciated. Go ahead.
I would like to clarify that within the South African context, we already have a program like that. It's called the Military Skills Development Program, mm-hmm. which is run by the South African National Defense Force. However, it's not a compulsory service, mm-hmm. whereby members will apply and they attend to this two-year program, and they are given a particular skill from different arms of service, and they can then use that skill upon exiting the defense force.
And that's why, Dan, we're talking about it from a mandatory perspective, that there are these programs that exist, but imagine what a mandatory, where we take all 18-year-olds in South Africa and we put them into this program where, as our previous caller, Hulisani, was saying, that it actually worked. It worked for him. You know, he became disciplined and the attitude changed and the skills exposure changed and the like. What would happen if we made this particular military service actually mandatory for all children, all young people in this country?
Okay. If we want to make it mandatory, it will then need us to first visit the Constitution, do amendments on the Constitution, because in its current form, the Constitution does not allow us to have a mandatory military service.
I wonder why.
It's due to things like freedom of movement, freedom of choice in terms of the chosen profession, right to bodily integrity. Now, if you say to someone, you are now forced to join the defense, you are practically saying the provisions within the Bill of Rights, we have to ignore them as they stand.
And I hear that part, Dan, but I wonder if the Constitution as it currently stands, does it serve the people of this country?
It does. And if you look at Section 36(1) of the Constitution, it talks about limitation of rights.
Mm.
Maybe we will need to expand on that to say, we would like to further limit the rights of the South African citizen when it comes to things such as military service. But currently, we can't simply have this program and implement it as it stands.
Because of the Constitution?
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely hear you with that. And that's why I'm questioning the mandatory element of it, especially given where we are with young people in this country. And from what I understand, the Constitution is supposed to be a living, breathing document, that when it's not relevant to the needs of the time and it's not working, then we're able to have certain amendments so that it can speak to the needs of the people.
Yes, we can have amendments. It's not that it's cast in stone. We can have amendments. But I've got one more contribution to make, Faith, in this conversation. Yes, it is okay to have certain programs that will empower the youth. But we also need to look into the family structures as well. A person is growing within a family structure from the day they were born up until they become 18, before they go to tertiary and other avenues. I see a lot of people are giving the right to be parents, they are giving it over to the state. We are mostly like parenting by proxy now. I think as parents, we also need to take a responsibility to ensure that we are raising responsible adults.
I definitely hear you on that. I definitely do. Pumlani in Rodebot, hi.
Great, thanks. I want to talk about mental cognitive ability.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, Faith, your mother could be a domestic worker and father a gardener. Those parents, they make a child and the child becomes a genius. What I'm trying to say is God sprinkles out IQ randomly. So you have genius all over South Africa. Some poor, some rich, some girls, some boys. But the problem we have is other nations, what they will do is they will create programs to go out into the nation and look for these children, especially the geniuses that live in squalor conditions, like the poor children who are geniuses. What they will do is they will put them in boarding schools and make sure that they grow up and they become something. The truth is, not everyone can go to university and succeed. Not everyone can be a software engineer. Not everyone can be a machine learning engineer. You need to have the ability to stomach it. Do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
So if a program worked for Siyabonga and Bangashe, you know, if a program, that does not necessarily mean it's going to work for all children. Some children are geniuses, but they were never given an opportunity. It's the geniuses that were left behind. And as a result, they end up going to the military, and they go there, they succeed. Not because of the military program works. It's just that this is a genius. They were going to survive. They were going to survive, and they were going to make it regardless.
Yeah, Pumla, I hear that, you know. But what are we going to do with the 68% or so unemployment rate of young people in this country that is not going away? What are we going to do? As much as we can try to make it fit right and be inclusive of all individuals, which is fine. No program will ever be 100%. That we've already accepted. But we're sitting here with an unemployment rate of about, it's actually over 70% of young people that are sitting. We're sitting here with 3.5 million or more young people that don't even have jobs, that are not even educated, that are not even trained, that are sitting in the streets idle. What are we doing?
Don't worry, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Remember, the WEF have a plan. By 2030, you're going to own nothing and you'll be happy.
See, that's the problem here. Papa, Mom, how do we move from this? Because I tell you, all of these suggestions may be put on the table, but they will not be implemented until the people themselves say, hang on a second. Surely we should be revisiting certain elements, whether it's gap years where we're focusing on mandatory skills development, or it's gap years when we're talking about gap year with the purpose. Because we cannot sustain an unemployment rate of young people that are sitting at over 70% in an expanded version and think that one day we're going to wake up as South Africa and everything's going to be okay.
No, definitely, Faith. And I'm not against mandatory service training, by the way. Like I said earlier on in our conversation, if you decide to take a gap year, let it be a gap year with a purpose. And it's even more important than ever right now be having this conversation. The world of work is rapidly changing, which means school, and it goes back to what the caller said, which means family, school, society, and business need to come together to make sure that our education system, for one, can keep up. But more than anything, that we are grooming a generation of young people who are future ready, you know? Future ready, meaning that they're ready to face any challenges that may come. And we should not wait until they in matric or post matric to introduce, you know, programs such as mandatory in service training. Like I said earlier on, I'm going to go back. So we start from that elementary phase leading up to a primary, high school. And then when they get to matric, these are young people who know who they are, number one, who are disciplined, who are aware of, the unemployment rates that we have in the country, who are sure of what kind of a future they want. That's where I am. If you're going to take a gap year, let it be a gap year with a purpose. Like I said earlier on, you know, an idle mind. Idling mind is more worse than the mind of a politician. So it's important that we prepare our young people to be future ready, not post-matric, but beginning, you know, in the elementary phase and leading up to matric to make sure that they're future ready. Faith.
Much appreciated. You know, Papa, I'll leave it here for now, but I think it's an ongoing conversation that we must keep having, and judging by the calls as well, it needs almost like a round two. And maybe we need to look at, as a round two, Kulu, how do we include these skills development programs in and around the country and say, how are you serving young people? You know, whether it's through the military, whether it's through government programs, whether it's through, work readiness programs and the like. And just to say, how is it that these programs are actually manifesting in the solving of some of the problems that we've been confronted with on a daily basis? But is it not time for us to actually start having a critical conversation about what does mandatory service look like for young people? You cannot have 3.5 million of them sitting idle in the corner of the street and think that one day this country is going to be okay. That's not okay in itself. Lumka Chiki, much appreciated. And of course, a Papa Machikawe, much appreciated as well for your time. And you on 0861-987-000.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.